Thursday, October 16th, 2014, this is Patrick Sullivan interviewing John Harney Jr. So,
yes.
You were born in and grew up in Salisbury?
No.
No.
Ithaca, buddy. I was apparently, someone should have been studying more up at Cornell, and apparently there was a break in the action, and all of a sudden I appeared while Dad was at Cornell in hotel administration. And so my first residence was, I'm not so sure whether it was the bottom, middle, or top drawer of a bureau, but in some student room, wherever they were living, up in Cornell, that was my first residence. And so there we are.
A dorm room.
A dorm room, something. Wherever they were, I don't know where they were. But apparently that's the story, is that amazingly enough, there wasn't, a crib was not to be had at that point, but apparently a drawer did just as well.
So when did you move here?
Okay, so we had to, they went to, I think we went to like West Cornwall, the covered bridge, and that was that pink building. And then that must have been like 58 or something. And
you were born in
54. So they went down and had mom and dad had a country inn there in the middle of town, and it was quite something apparently. So instead of having inventory, Joe Bates had the meat store just up the road in West Cornwall, that just, you know, it was 100 feet up. And so apparently if someone came in and ordered like 5 steaks, mom would take the order, dad would rush out the back door, pad his way up to Joe Bates's meat shop, grab the key off the sill, go in, get the steaks out of the refrigerator, write a quick note, I've got 5 steaks, and then run back down and start cooking. Isn't that funny? Jesus Christ.
And what is the building that was the inn, is it still there?
Yeah, it is. It's that big pink, it's a huge pink building that's just up from the Moose on the same side.
That's getting renovated.
That's getting big renovated or something like that. But and then Mariel, the hair, you know, the barber was down there at that point. I guess the three boys, Keith, Mike, and I, would be dropped off at his barber shop down there. And I guess Mariel babysat us for a while while he cut hair. I don't know what happened.
Keith and Mike are your brothers.
Yeah. So, and then after that, Dad came up here and did some sort of partnership with Reese Harris and Don Warner with the White Hart, and so they were probably the money, and Dad was operations. So that was, had to have been around 60, somewhere in there. And then he stayed until they managed, I guess, just out into the early 80s somewhere. But I was thinking about it. I remember Dad with Everett Dirksen. He somehow got Everett Dirksen to come in. And those were in his like Goldwater years, which he never strayed far from.
And your father or Dirksen?
Yeah, Dad. And I think he was a little to the right of like Genghis Khan or something. But he was very proud of the fact he got Senator Everett Dirksen in. And I just remember we were renting the house on the corner of Reservoir and Belgo, and the one with the wavy stone walls. And I just remember seeing those two men really, both were really thin. One was older, I guess Mr. Burkson. And so, yeah, sort of like those black patent shoes, black socks, dark trousers, a white sort of starched shirt with a narrow black tie or dark tie. And I just remember them sitting out on the lawn on chairs discussing politics. So where that all led, I don't know. But it somehow it did. And
did you go to Salisbury Central?
Yeah, Salisbury Central. Well, first Town Hill until fourth grade. Then they must have decided that there's no sense throwing away good money after bad. And so they put me back into Salisbury Central. And so graduated from Salisbury Central in 68. And then went to Salisbury School to 72. And after that, Williams College until 79. And so.
Who, when you were a kid in Lakeville, who were your buddies? Who did you run with?
So, Bob Dufour, who lived on Lakeview, Matty Kiefer, Gordy Woodbeck, all those guy kids that skied in Swasip, Jack Phelps, Jack Phelps's brothers, and so that's what we sort of just hooked up with those all the kids in the Swasip program. There was just like the Pollocks, whose dad was the minister of the Methodist Church. Gordy, you know, Bam and, you know, Bam Whitbeck. Victor Clark and his kids. All those people. And it was sort of like magical because for like a decade, all the parents, I don't know what happened to the sense of time, but then there seemed to be plenty of time, because on Sundays and the weekends during the winter, there would be 5 to 10 families, parents and children, doing cross-country ski tours up on starting in Sellick Hill, and we'd go up on Mount Raga and have lunch at Dresser's Cabin, which always, since it faced south, always was the warmest on the deck and everything, and then ski all over Mount Raga and up to Bear Mountain, Lion's Head. Walt Erickson, the Ericksons, were there, and it was a different time because you don't see that like happening now. No one either has the time, or maybe it was a lack of snow the last couple of decades or something. But it's interesting, when I ski up there alone, which I like to do during the winter, I don't feel alone because I just remember all of the times skiing with the Ericksons and the Whitbecks and the Kiefers and, you know, the Harneys and the Pollocks. You know, all of those people. I mean, it was just, it was quite something. And then we also did the jumping, and so Larry Stone, we heard more bad music in Larry's cold Volkswagen, freezing, going up to Lake Placid and Brattleboro, than one would care to have. And that's when Vic Clark and George Kiefer would just fill their VW buses with skis and kids, and off we would go. And Berger Torreson was the coach, and he was an Olympian in, you know, 1960, and he was married to one of the Saytrees, and he was in the 10th Mountain Division. He was one of our heroes. So we had Berger Torreson, we had Larry Stone, and George Kiefer. And George Kiefer's favorite thing was to, on a ski tour, was to say to the unsuspecting novice, usually another parent, and on one particular occasion, my mother, that, you know, pine tar is an old favorite of the people who lived up on the mountain. And all you would do is just take a knife and swipe the pine tar, you know, the pine, whatever that congealed pine sap, and amazingly, it is a wonderful, refreshing treat, sort of like a gum. And somehow George got Mom to take some on the way up, skiing up Greylock, and the results were not pretty. So, and then you've got Vic Clark also, who is irreplaceable, and his theory in business was that if it was a sunny day, it was too nice to work, and he would be on the river canoeing or kayaking, or in the winter skiing or rock climbing, and he introduced us to a whole different way of living, and where on the nice days you would go out, and on the rainy days then that was a day for work. So
did you spell Clark with an E?
Yeah, that, so that's I think so. Yeah, I'll get that. And Vic Clark was one of our heroes. Hey, he was like, you just don't see it anymore. He would spend more time with all of us kids, outdoors thing, showing us rock climbing. And you'd ask him, what kind of knot was that he would be tying? And usually it's all very intricate knots that are very specific, and it would be different each time. And he goes, who knows? It's called a Hindu rig. And does it hold? Well, we'll find out. And down on one of his houses at 331 Main Street in Lakeville, he and Larry Stone were putting up, you know, whatever that stuff is. What are those supporting stuff? You know, where you go up and put the planks on it and stuff like that.
Scaffolding
to work on the roof. Larry was helping him, and Larry goes, this just doesn't look very secure, and Vic reassured him not to worry, and then a wind came, and it shook, and it all fell, and there was Vic and Larry holding on to whatever they could hold on to the roof, with Vic laughing. So it never, you know, he was, he had a wonderful way about him that was very... he was always hospitable and encouraging to us kids, and he was one of the great ones. So, and then George Kiefer, we learned how to work from George, and he had us help with the Christmas trees, and learning the joys of trimming the trees in the summer with the deer flies, and then cutting them in November, and stacking them in trailers. And so there would be a huge crowd of young adolescents in seventh and eighth grade that George would sort of instruct as far as woodcraft. And also with George, remember Christopher Rand, who wrote the book? His description of George is so accurate, because back then, like in the late 60s, early 70s, the memories of George walking through, not that nobody ever walked through the woods so swiftly and confidently as George, and we'd all be like running after him, and he would have a marking axe in one hand, and he would be just like marking trees with one little quick movement, and then, but his stride was just, and he knew everything. So we learned, you know, George was like a father to a lot of us. And the other guy that I remember is Skeet Morey. So he taught us how to, who lived down by,
what was the name?
Skeet Morey. He's like the best woodsman that God has ever made. So one of the Moreys, and he taught us all how to hunt and trapped, and he knew the woods and the animals and everything that lived in it better than they did. And all he did, he just took great joy also walking through the woods, and he would always have like a little stick or his rifle or something, and he would show, he would go, the raccoon or the mink or the otter or this or whatever we were after would do this, this, and this, and he goes, hence, you have to do this. And he showed us how to like put the traps in the oil of beeswax or scent, and then how to figure out where to place them and how to deal with everything, and then also showed us how to hunt, and to the displeasure of my father, because hunting with skeet also meant sort of freelancing, so we never had any licenses, and it was old style apparently hunting. And so Dad would come home and he'd open the garage door and God damn it, and he'd shut it because there would be deer hanging in there. And are these things legal? No, we were out with skeet. God damn it. So and then skeet also showed us how to fish. So he showed us, he usually fished with worms and liked down by the stream that went by the ski jump. And he showed us how to do that, and more importantly, how to clean them and eat them. And they were fabulous. And so Skeet was, he brought us up on Mount Riga in the mountain laurel, and he said to my two brothers and I to stay right there, and that he would push deer, they would come out at this certain point, and then to shoot them right then. And so we were just in there in the snow and the mountain laurel, and sure enough, the deer came right out at the same spot that he said, and we shot it, and he came out through the laurel laughing a little while later, and he was showing us how to clean. And we were all leaning over intent, trying to learn as if we were going to be woodsmen. And all of a sudden, he stood up abruptly and he spun around and he said to my brother, Mike, hold this. And it was this enormous liver of the deer. And he put it in Mike's hands, whereas Mike fainted and fell back into the snow and laurel with this enormous liver on top of his chest. And Skeet howled with laughter. Oh. All he did was laugh. He found that to be a great humor. And so, growing up in Salisbury, you had people like that. And Birger Torreson, who, you know, Olympian, cross country and jumping. And he took the time to teach and coach all the kids in town, whoever was interested in cross country skiing and jumping. And he was an amazing man. He was like, he was just one of our other heroes. And he was so patient with us, and he taught us, and would just continually show us how to cross-country ski. And then he was like, when we were packing the jumps, like the 60 meter, I mean, it scares the crap out of me, even now. I mean, I just will not go down the hill. From the top of the landing hill, and there is Berger in his late 70s or something, and on a pair of cross-country skis he was packing, and everyone's packing, and all of a sudden you see this Norwegian just turn his skis downhill, and straight down the hill he went, and did this perfect tell mark through the transition as if it were nothing, and then a graceful turn further on the landing hill, and that was that. And none of us would do it. I just remember up on the fields of Selig Hill, he would all of a sudden turn his, you know, go down those big fields, and these graceful telemark turns, just these big, huge, sweeping turns, and everyone was in awe. I mean, no one could believe what he was doing, and we'd never seen anything like it in our lives. So he was. So we had all these people that it just took time to help bring us up.
Do you want some more coffee?
Oh, I'm fine. Excellent.
So how, you've raised how many kids in?
Four.
Four, in all in Lakeland or all in
Let's see. Right, Sharon's got her daughter, Rachel, who was always out in Denver. And then Kathleen. So Rachel, Kathleen, Beckett, and then Griff.
So how has Salisbury changed from your childhood to theirs?
It's very different. I wish that they would have had a lot of the similar experiences, and we could wander around at will in the fields and woods with everyone and not worry about Lyme disease. That's the biggest, one of the bigger changes is that all of a sudden a lot of that is shut down as far as the outdoor experience. You're a lot more cautious. And then who replaces George Kiefer, Vic Clark, Berger Torsen, Larry is now up in Lake Placid. And so, I guess everything just evolves and changes. So both Beckett and Griff went more for theater. I was all excited for like football and soccer and skiing. I was all ready to go. I was going to be a wonderful, happy parent. And all of a sudden I had to make a shift to being a wonderful, happy theater parent. It's considerably different. It just seemed like parents had more time. Families had more time. When we were growing up in the 60s and 70s, and it seems like probably the kids are more busy right now, with school and their other activities. But then they find, they find their own heroes, like Michael Berkeley, Lori Belter. They just find their own, they just have to find their own heroes among adults in the venues that they're interested in. But it makes me a little bit sad that it's changed in that respect. But I'm sure the generation before me probably thought we were, the world was coming to an end with us. Everyone survived. So, but I think the touchstone for me growing up here and coming back has always been the outdoors here. And so for me, no matter how much Salisbury and Lakeville changes, where I spend most of my time when not working is either on the river or lakes or ponds, or up on Mount Riga doing what I did as a child. And the big difference is now I have more gear. and so it's interesting. In some respects, Salisbury has changed considerably to whatever it is, 50, 60% weekend ownership. Rather. And it seemed like that wasn't the case in the 60s and 70s. So it was more, just families It was probably not as an affluent community then, is my guess, and more, you know, families just here working. But then something, you know, something happened where it became more of a weekend community. So, which has, you know, which is great, as it offers tons of opportunities to everyone. But that's the one thing that hasn't changed, is you can go within 5 minutes and hike. You can disappear on Indian Mountain, Mount Riga, Lion's Head, Bear Mountain, Sages Ravine. You can disappear, because so that part of Salisbury is always there. Very few people, all of the lakes and rivers, heavily underused. So you could just, you know, it's like you're the only one in the universe. So that part of Salisbury has not changed.